What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. And we are two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, writing about the Chargers over the last five seasons and doing our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly during the season. And now we are going on our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, we have a very fun show packed for you guys today. We are going to continue the AFC East crossover, and today I am talking with Joe Marino from the Locked On Bills. He is also a big member of the Draft Network, so I'm excited to talk with him about this Bills offseason. And then in the first segment, we'll be starting with the news that the NFL has made a statement on how football is going to progress in California because they might have different rules than some of the other states, like Arizona, who is allowing sports to resume this Friday professionally. So we'll talk about that. And SB Nation coming out with its list of the top position groups in the NFL. The Chargers have one of those top position groups, so you're definitely going to want to hear that. And then in the second segment, we'll be talking about a list of four Chargers players that are primed to make their first Pro Bowl in the 2020 season. So we'll tell if we agree with those and the chances we could actually see these guys making their first Pro Bowl team. So David, let's go ahead and get into it. This week, it was reported by the NFL that they are going to explore all options on how to play the 2020 regular season on time. And SB Nation came out with a list of the top position groups, and the Chargers had a group that made the list. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. Sports fans were scared a little bit on Tuesday when it was announced that LA County will be forced to extend their stay-at-home order for the next 3 months, putting in peril the sporting events that could happen in LA County, including the Chargers' new stadium with the Rams in Inglewood, which would be affected by that statute, while the off-season training activities, according to the reports out there right now, would not be because they are not in Los Angeles County. So NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy was asked about how the NFL would operate in Los Angeles, and he said that their plan includes games at SoFi Stadium. We'll be prepared to make adjustments as necessary as we have during this offseason, demonstrating that we can safely and efficiently conduct key activities. He also said that they will continue to make decisions based on the latest advice of medical and public health officials, as well as in full compliance with the current and future government regulations. And the Chargers are definitely affected by regulations the most out of many NFL teams because they are in California, which has stricter rules regarding these things. So, David, it is going to be interesting to see how they end up doing this because they say they're going to start the season on time, but playing these games in Los Angeles might not be an option.
Yeah, no, it seems increasingly likely that it's probably not going to take place in LA at all for the rest of the year. With how the LA County leadership is talking, sports in LA could be in jeopardy for the remainder of the season. But the NFL is demonstrating that they are going to be flexible and they're going to do whatever it takes for their season to go on without a hitch. So if that means relocating some of these NFL teams to play in other states that might not have the same kind of restrictions that California does, they say they are prepared to do that. In an article by Mike Florio, he said, as previously noted, it wouldn't be difficult to move the three California teams to other stadiums. It's also possible that both LA teams will share the new venue in Las Vegas with the Raiders. So the NFL obviously wants to do everything they can to play as many games as they can, so they're going to do what they have to do to make that happen. And fortunately, they're going to have an opportunity to do that in Las Vegas with the Raiders.
Yeah, that might end up being the case, and there are some scenarios that have the 49ers joining up with the Cardinals because there would be no scheduling conflicts if they were both to play at the Arizona Cardinals Stadium. So there are many options that could happen, and I would not doubt that the league finds a way to get this season going, but if they're dealing with state regulations, it could be hard to determine where those games are taking place. But I think it is good to have a backup plan like this, even though that's the last thing the Chargers want to do when they are moving into their brand new stadium. But the other big news this week is that SB Nation came out with a list of the best position groups in the NFL, and they have the Chargers pegged as the best secondary in the NFL. And when you look at the article, one of the main things that it touches on is just the fact that the Chargers not only get Derwin James healthy this year as of now, and he only played 5 games last season, but they also added the talents of Chris Harris Jr., who has been one of the top cornerbacks in the league since he came into it as an undrafted free agent in 2010, and now he joins the Chargers. So, David, this Chargers secondary was already loaded before they added Chris Harris Jr., and now SB Nation thinks that addition plus a healthy Derwin James could make them the best unit in the league.
I mean, it very well could. Last year, they gave up only 200.2 passing yards per game, which was good for 5th in the NFL. And it's crazy that they were able to do that when they only had 11 interceptions on the year. They were tied for 22nd in the league with only 11 interceptions. And I've said many times that a good pass rush is always going to help your secondary out. And the Chargers were 28th in the league with only 30 sacks. So I think that's a direct result in the fact that they only had 11 interceptions. If they are going to be the best secondary in the NFL, Daniel, they are going to have to do better than that.
Yeah, to be considered one of the best secondaries, or in this case, the best secondary, you should definitely be near the top of the league in interceptions and passing yards allowed. And to see what they did last year when Brandon Faison played in a lot of games as a backup last year when they missed Derwin James and Adrian Phillips for such a big part of the season, that also definitely hurt them. And I think losing Adrian Phillips definitely hurts them in this conversation as well. And I think the last part of this is defensive coordinator Gus Bradley has all of the pieces to make this the best secondary in the NFL, but there are some guys that are going to have to play out of place. There are some players that are getting into new roles, expanded roles, and playing different positions. So it's going to be up to him to get these guys to have the chemistry needed in the back end to actually make them the top secondary in the NFL. But we do have 2 more segments to get into. We're going to get into first-time Pro Bowlers coming up in the next segment before we end up getting into our AFC East divisional crossover with the Locked On Bills at the end of the show. But first, I need to tell you guys about the best protein bar on the planet. And of course, I'm talking about Built Bars. Built Bars are tasty. They're 100% covered in chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew. And the best part is they have 16 amazing flavors like peanut butter brownie or mint brownie that are all packed with protein and taste delicious. So if you guys are health conscious, Built Bars are the way to go to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. And I also want to shout out Lloyd Mirafuentes Jr. on Facebook for giving Built Bar and us a shout out on Facebook and telling everybody exactly how they can save money on Built Bars and supporting the show. So we really appreciate that. And you guys can get helped out too if you go to builtbar.com, promo code locked on, and you'll get $10 off your first order. That's promo code locked on, all caps, one word, for $10 off at builtbar.com. All right, well, it's time to get into the next segment, looking at a list from ChargersWire.com, going over some of the players on the Chargers that could be primed to make Pro Bowl appearances for the first time in their careers coming up in the 2020 season. And David, when I look at this list, I think they absolutely nailed it, because this is talking about players who are going to make the Pro Bowl for their first time, not just making the Pro Bowl in general, like Derwin James or Keenan Allen or Melvin Ingram. All of those guys have already made Pro Bowls before. So these are just first-time Pro Bowlers, and I think they hit the nail on the head here. The 4 guys that they mentioned were Drew Tranquil, Austin Eckler, Mike Williams, and Hunter Henry. So I think we should start with probably the longest shot to make a Pro Bowl appearance in this one, and that is Drew Tranquil, especially because, David, he is going up now with Chargers star rookie linebacker Kenneth Murray, and both of those guys can play on the field at the same time, but I think both of those guys playing well will probably take away from how good we think of them individually if just the unit is playing better. And I think linebacker is a harder position to stand out, especially for a team that has a smaller profile like the Chargers, because we're talking about Pro Bowl votes, so it's somewhat of a popularity contest. The one thing you can do about it is have your stats be so good that even the general public knows about you and can't skip you in Pro Bowl voting. So I think looking at the guy that probably has the least chance to make it this year, but I still think is a good pick, that brings me to Drew Tranquil.
Yeah, no, I like the pick of Drew Tranquil. I mean, you look at him, he had 75 tackles last year. He was all over the football field. He made great plays. You can definitely see the defense get lifted when he was in there. It was a nice shot in the arm. And also, I'd like to bring up the fact that he brings tremendous special teams value as well. He had two blocked punts, so if he doesn't make it as a linebacker, he might make it as a special teamer. I mean, he has that ability. He has affected the game before. When you make game-changing plays like that, that will definitely get you some notoriety. So I think he's a great, smart, tough, young, up-and-coming linebacker, and we're going to enjoy watching Drew Tranquil play for a long time.
And I think unless you just, you know, get like 150 tackles, it's just a hard spot to make the Pro Bowl. And maybe, you know, he gets five interceptions, a couple sacks or something. But I think Drew Tranquil is a very solid player. I think what's kind of inspiring about him is just last year, he worked his ass off on special teams, found his way onto the field, had other players getting sent home for disciplinary reasons, still kind of didn't get a starting spot over that, and still just continued to play well until they had no choice but to keep him on the field more often. So let's get into the second guy on the list, a guy that you might be surprised hasn't made a Pro Bowl, but it's mostly due to health, and that's Hunter Henry, who's played over the last four seasons coming off of his career best year of 55 receptions for over 650 yards in only 12 games. I mean, those are pretty ridiculous numbers. And I think when you're looking at Hunter Henry, David, you just say, well, I mean, really all you need is the health. If he has the health, I think the stats are a given. I think he'll put up stats as long as he's on the field. And I think he showed that by putting up top 10 numbers last year at tight end, even though he only played in three quarters of the games.
Yeah, no, this guy, the guy is dynamic. I mean, he has such a great catch radius. He has glue for hands. He does not drop a lot of passes. And I think, you know, with Phillip Rivers making some questionable decisions last year, he still found a way to be productive and really move the chains. He's been a really great option on third downs. And we pounded the table many times. Hey, you got to get this guy more involved. You got to give him more touches. You got to get him more receptions because this guy helps the offense go. He is a catalyst for the offense. I think the offense is at its best, Daniel, when they're incorporating Hunter Henry early and often.
Yeah, and a lot of the games that Hunter Henry is healthy and the Chargers lose, you can kind of look at a lot of those games and just say, look, they just didn't get Hunter Henry enough involved. And I know that's been our notes coming out of a lot of games, and it's been directly tied to their success. So I think the next thing is, can he be really effective under Shane Steichen? Because he was actually more effective under Ken Whisenhunt last year than he was when Shane Steichen ended up taking over. So I think that's a storyline to watch going forward. So
he seemed pretty excited about the fact that he's going to have a quarterback that's going to be able to roll out and extend plays, and that might help him get more opportunities.
It definitely may, and I think just having quarterbacks that can keep the play alive a little bit longer should open up some opportunities for him to kind of make some adjustments, find a soft spot in his zone, and kind of sit down instead of just, you know, having a guy that's just standing back there. But moving on to the next guy, this is Mike Williams, who I think is on this list probably the second most likely player to make it. I think him and Hunter Henry are very close, but I think it's mainly because wide receiver is such a hard position with the talented wide receiver. So when you're looking at Mike Williams, first of all, I mean, Keenan Allen probably has already etched a spot onto that Pro Bowl roster by now as long as he stays healthy. So two wide receivers from the same team could be a little bit tough to believe, but I think we all know that Mike Williams can do it because I think we've seen one season where he balled out and scored 10 receiving touchdowns, and then we saw one season where he balled out and everything but receiving touchdowns, while also having a season where his whole production was based on giant 50-50 jump balls down the field, which helped him yardage-wise, but at the same time, you would still like to see him get more targets than he did last year, and you saw what he was able to do with those limited targets. So for a guy like Mike Williams going up against some of the receivers that he is in the AFC and just in the NFL in general, he's going to have to put up numbers kind of like the ones he predicted, you know, 10-plus touchdowns, somewhere between 1,300 to 1,500 yards. If he does what he is kind of predicting himself to do, I think he'll definitely make it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I think those are more lofty goals that he set for himself. I mean, hey, shoot for the moon, right? I mean, I think that's what you have to do when you're setting your own personal goals. You want to shoot as high as possible and then land where you can, but Mike Williams is definitely talented enough. I just don't know if he's going to be used in the manner that will allow him to achieve those yards. I just think Keenan Allen's going to eat into that a lot. They now have a competent third wide receiver that's going to eat some of those touches that he got. And also, honestly, I don't know if that's using Mike Williams the best way that he is intended. I just hated that they did not use him on third downs and in the red zone more often. I think he's a guy that you should target on the fade at least once a game if you're in the red zone, like every single game. I just think that's non-negotiable and something the Chargers have not done. They need to use what this guy does well to capitalize on him. I think the way he makes the Pro Bowl, Daniel, is by scoring a multitude of touchdowns. I think he is capable of putting 10 to 15 touchdowns up if they use him properly.
Yeah, and he's got to come down with those jump balls too. I think we saw him kind of get a few fades early in this season, and then Phillip Rivers seemed to lose a little bit of faith with him on those throws because we just kind of stopped seeing it because he had a couple of drops. They would have been tough catches, but balls he definitely could have caught that he didn't. So I think for me, it's not just having a lot of receiving yards or receiving touchdowns or average yards per catch. It's putting all those things together in one season and standing out, you know, amongst your peers who are out there balling out. And for a lot of those guys, they're the number one target on their team, which is something that Mike Williams, even going into this season, we don't necessarily see happening. So if you're talking about percentage chances of Mike Williams getting into the Pro Bowl, I would put it somewhere in the 30s. I mean, just because there's so many good wide receivers in the NFL. If he balls out, I mean, even with Keenan Allen probably already taking one of those spots, there's definitely a good chance he could do it. But he has to stay healthy as well. So the next guy I want to talk about whose health is going to be majorly important for this upcoming season, and that is Austin Ekeler, who I think is probably the number one player on this list, who is probably the most likely to make the Pro Bowl just because, like we talked about with Mike Williams, doing everything in the same season, Austin Ekeler just does everything. He's going to put up the numbers of a number two receiver while also, you know, putting up running back numbers too, depending on how many carries he gets this season. So I think for him being a jack of all trade, but kind of a master of none in some ways, is going to hurt him because his biggest attribute is receiving, and the Pro Bowl running back last year was Derrick Henry. So that's like, those are two of the most opposite players you could think of, but Christian McCaffrey also made it as well and made two spots on the all pro team. So we've seen guys in this form, David, even though he doesn't run the ball as much as McCaffrey, get recognition in the Pro Bowl.
Well, I think they just need to make an all-purpose yards type of guy spot. They need to make a flex position for the Pro Bowl, and I think that would be Austin Ekeler every year because he does so many different things to help your football team. Obviously, he got close to 1,000 yards receiving last year. He's a yak monster for how small he is. He's so strong. He's just such a riveting player to watch. He has incredible talent, and he was an undrafted free agent. He went from undrafted free agent to secure four-year contract. I mean, it's been great to watch the evolution of Austin Ekeler from where he started to where he is now, and the beautiful and the best part about it is that he's still young and he has many good years ahead of him.
He does, and I think he definitely has some Pro Bowl appearances ahead of him as well, and I think how cool would that be for him? You know, the team decides to invest in him, and the first year into that investment, he gets a Pro Bowl nod. And I think that's a cool thing for him. And it helps when you're going to sign contracts. I didn't really show with Melvin Gordon, but those are all things that teams look at, Pro Bowl players. And I think Austin Ekeler, even though he's probably, you know, not going to put up 1,500 rushing yards this season, probably not going to put up 15 rushing touchdowns either, but I think he's more than capable of making the team, and I think the team deciding to stick with him and the role that he's going to have this year is going to put him more on the map as far as general NFL notoriety, because he definitely is a talented enough player to where more people should know who he is, because this guy is a game-breaking type of offensive weapon, and that's really all you can ask for. I mean, just an offensive weapon, and that's what Austin Ekeler is. So I think this is a good list by Chargers Wire. I think they pretty much got all of the players likely to make their first Pro Bowl. I mean, you're talking about first Pro Bowls. Who's it going to be? Trey Pipkins, you know, Michael Davis, Rayshon Jenkins, or maybe if you ask Anthony Lynn, but I don't think so. So I think these are the most likely guys. But that is going to wrap things up for this segment. We still have one more segment to get into. I sit down with the Draft Network and Locked On Bills host Joe Marino to get into the Bills offseason coming up right after this. All right, guys, well, now it's time to join up with Joe Marino, who is a senior draft analyst for the Draft Network. He also hosts the two Locked On shows, the Locked On Bills podcast, as well as the Draft Dudes podcast. So one of the things that I was excited about the most for this divisional crossover with the AFC East was talking to the Bills, because, I mean, it's been a wild offseason for the Bills. You know, so many things have happened. I mean, namely Tom Brady, you know, leaving the division and them being in a lot of places favorites to win the division for the first time, you know, since the last time they won it in, I think, 1995. So I think that's all really exciting. But I see a lot of parallels between these two teams, because you got one of those polarizing quarterbacks, Joe. You got, you know, Josh Allen, which is still the questions out there. Is Josh Allen good enough? They drafted Jake Fromm this year, you know, as a backup. But I think, you know, for a team that's getting ready to kind of try to figure out if we got the answer at quarterback, what are the feelings around Josh Allen going into year three?
A lot of optimism, I'll tell you that. You think about this quarterback, I mean, he struggled at Wyoming, but you saw the traits. And he wasn't a good college quarterback. Nobody's going to debate that. But you saw really exciting physical ability. And something that's been helpful to me in really appreciating how far Josh has come is going back and watching that Wyoming tape recently and understanding how much better he got from Wyoming to his rookie season, even the first half of his rookie season compared to the second half of his rookie season. And then the player that we saw evolve last year, I mean, it's pretty exciting. I mean, he's gotten a lot better. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's a finished product and that he's absolutely without a doubt the future and face of the Buffalo Bills for the long term. But I'll tell you that there's a lot of evidence that he can get better, and he has. And so
and that's what Charger fans are hoping with Justin Herbert, too, that his best football is ahead of him.
Right. And part of the important piece of Josh Allen's evaluation, in addition to the physical upside, was his work ethic and his intangibles and how much he cares and how much he loves the game and those type of things that go into it that allows him, that has allowed him to improve. And so the Bills will go, you know, they were able to go 10-6 last year with Josh Allen playing, you know, at an ascending level, but not certainly not at an elite level. And so you get excited about the infrastructure of this roster, how good the defense is, how much of the offense is coming back, and how comfortable things should be for Josh to kind of reach his peak this year in year three. Same coordinator all the way through his career so far, and, you know, an evolving set of weapons and an offensive line is pretty solid. So, you know, it's all right there for Josh, and the evidence, like I said, has been there that he can improve, and, you know, he's still hungry, he's still working hard, and it's almost like that Houston Texans loss in the playoffs could be something that we look back on and say that was a big launch point for Josh in terms of really honing in and taking that next step. So I'm very optimistic, but you know, he's got to go out and do it.
The way that the Bills changed their offense around him last season, as opposed to his rookie season, and really played to more of his strengths, I think it's very on the way up as far as what it feels like with this team right now. But the Bills made one of the blockbuster trades of the offseason, making really a win now trade, trying to seemingly capitalize on the departure of Tom Brady when they brought in Stephon Diggs. And I know they gave up a lot, but just overall, did you like the trade?
Well, you go back to the draft and the Bills were picking 22, and the hope was that you found a number one receiver at 22. That was the biggest thing that the Bills had to do. I mean, they scored 19 points against the Houston Texans in the playoffs. Houston's defense was terrible last year. We saw that. The Chiefs just poured it on, scored at will. I mean, a very poor defense. I think they gave up a touchdown on 25% of the drives against that defense throughout the season. The Bills scored 19 points in overtime. As exciting as the offense was at times last year, it had to score more. And the number one need was wide receiver. Now, John Brown came in and had a career year with Buffalo. Excited about him. Cole Beasley, really good from the slot, but they needed that do-everything guy that they can funnel the passing game through, and Stephon Diggs can do that. He's proven he can do that. He's 26 years old. He's on a team-friendly deal for the next four seasons, coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, and he's good after the catch, and he can get down the field, and he's good in contested situations, and so he is that do-everything, true number one receiver that will help this Bills offense score more points in theory. And so when you consider, okay, they gave up pick 22 and obviously some, you know, late to mid round picks in addition, were you going to get Stephon Diggs at 22? No, you're going to get Justin Jefferson or T. Higgins or something like that. So the Bills, like you said there, I think understanding the circumstances, understanding they're close and that you needed to give your young quarterback this type of weapon, you know, don't take your chance with a first round receiver. I think I saw a stat that the average first round wide receiver over the last 5 years is averaging like 391 receiving yards. Go ahead and get yourself Stephon Diggs and get ahead of the curve.
Yeah, never forget about John Ross, people. I mean, just it all sounds good in theory, getting your first round receiver, but that's a really hard position to kind of translate sometimes. So getting into the rest of the offseason and free agency specifically, the Bills, I mean, kind of went on a little spending spree. They made a bunch of additions. They had some brand names, I guess, in Josh Norman. They also got Mario Addison, AJ Klein, a couple of those guys. I know a lot of the focus is going to be on Josh Norman, but who do you think will have the greatest impact of the guys they brought in this offseason?
Well, you know, the Brandon Bean, it's his third offseason. He came in 2017. And so early on, it was really kind of taking his medicine and getting the team out of cap hell, if you will. And then the last 2 years of, you know, he's had cap space and he's went out and spent it and got a lot of good veteran talent. But for me, when I think about where this team really improved in free agency, it was the defensive line. Now, that's given they let Shaq Lawson and Jordan Phillips walk in free agency, but they brought in, you mentioned Mario Addison. They brought in Quentin Jefferson from the Seahawks. They brought in Vernon Butler. They drafted AJ Epenesa in the second round. You add that to Jerry Hughes and Trent Murphy and Star Latulay and, of course, Ed Oliver, who they took in the top 10 last year. And suddenly Sean McDermott's got the deepest defensive line he's had since he's been part of the Bills dating back to 2017. And so I get very excited about the depth of this defensive line. The Bills, everybody knows they have a good defense, a top three unit the last 2 years. But it's not been this deep and talented on the defensive line under McDermott. So I think that's something that really gets me excited when I think about how a good defense can get even better. It's because you love to rotate guys and you've got more talent up front than you've ever had. So I think all of the big theme this year, last year it was the offensive line and wide receiver. This year it was really about getting depth and quality up front of the defensive line, and they certainly did that.
Yeah, I think then they added just a lot of depth in general too, which is something you want to see teams, you know, just continue to keep adding good player depth because injuries happen, obviously. So getting into the 2020 Bills draft class, obviously they did not have a first round pick because of that Stephon Diggs trade, but I think, you know, they kind of got the best next best thing because Iowa star defensive end AJ Epenesa falls to them late in the second round. Were you surprised at all that they were still able to get a guy who was thought as highly of that late in the second round?
Yeah, you know, I kind of think that the Bills, you kind of talked about it already, Daniel, and that they've built a lot of depth, that they add a lot of quality pieces throughout the course of the draft. And Brandon Bean positioned himself at pick 54 to let the talent fall to him. And so kind of by the time you got done thinking about every scenario for pick 54, right, you dealt with pick 6. 54 is a lot further down the board. You finally come to this conclusion that it's like, just let the talent fall. It's going to happen, right? It always does. And I think this was a good example of that happening. And the Bills didn't have a need at defensive end. They're loaded at defensive end. But they got an opportunity here to get a player that really fits culture-wise, fits the scheme, gives them a power rusher with long arms and heavy hands. And, you know, you think about him and Ed Oliver on this defensive line and putting them on the same side of the line of scrimmage and doing twists and stunts with those guys, some nice complementary skill sets. And so I think this is just a good job of Brandon Bean being patient, understanding that his first round pick is Stephon Diggs, and that inevitably in every draft, good players fall, and he was in good position to snatch one up. And I think that's what happened with AJ Epenesa.
Yeah, and I think, you know, rosters, I mean, just being able to have that kind of freedom is something that, you know, if you're the Chargers, if you have a quarterback, then you can go get, you know, the franchise left tackle. If you have the left tackle, you maybe feel a little bit better about passing on some of those guys. So just having a fully loaded roster and a well, you know, rounded out roster, I think means so much. So now there's a lot of guys that they drafted, the Bills, that is, I mean, later on in the draft that I really liked. And I think it was them continuing to kind of let guys fall to them. But when you're looking at, you know, the non-big names at the top of the draft, who are some of the guys deeper on in the Bills draft that you're really excited to watch?
Well, I guess I'd go with Gabe Davis, the Bills' fourth round pick out of UCF. You know, obviously their top three receivers are well set, Diggs, Brown, and Beasley, but Gabe Davis gives the Bills a vertical size threat. And, you know, one thing that Josh Allen hasn't been as consistent as you'd like for him to be, especially given his arm talent, is the deep ball. And Gabe Davis, I mean, that was, you watch his tape at UCF, that's all he did. He ran 9 routes and double moves and vertical seam routes, and he got open and made plays on the ball. He's got size. So that type of receiver was something that was kind of missing from the unit. And so I like to see that. But, you know, I know that it's not a late round pick, but my favorite pick the Bills made was Zach Moss in the third round, a running back. And when you think about kind of this team going into the draft and not a whole lot of needs, one thing that I thought that they could improve was RB2. And the Bills are very much a committee backfield. It'll be a 60-40 split between Devin Singletary, the lead back, and Zach Moss, the RB2 there. And dating back to 2017, that's been a position that has received 150 plus carries a year. And right now, going into the draft, before they drafted Zach Moss, that was going to be TJ Yeldon. I thought that was a good chance to upgrade, and I did that with Zach Moss, who is a good downhill runner that's going to, you know, challenge you with pad level and physicality. He's got good vision and contact balance. He's good in pass pro. He catches the football nice. And so you have an elusive back in Singletary. You've got your downhill thumper and Moss, and you've got a really economic backfield. Both of your top two backs are third round rookies, you know, Singletary last year, Moss this year. So as the Bills, you know, all these talented young players become free agents, you have to pay them a whole lot more money. You feel good that your running back situation is solved for the next 3 years with guys on rookie contracts that were picked in the third round.
Yeah, I think that's exactly where you want those rookie contracts. And I think you saw the Chargers do that as well, even though they didn't necessarily have a huge need at running back. But I think, you know, Chargers fans are definitely more filled in now on the Buffalo Bills season. I think both of these seasons are going to be really exciting to watch for very different reasons. But Joe, that was awesome, man. I mean, thanks for getting together to do this. I can't wait to actually do it when there's an actual game coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, and if I could just echo some things you said about Tyrod Taylor here before we wrap, because look, he is going to keep your season afloat. He's never going to be the guy that's going to throw a ton of interceptions or take bad chances. He's going to take care of the football. You're going to run the ball well. He's got good receivers that mesh with him and Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. And you're going to play good defense. And that's not the number one pick. All right. I mean, so I thought that was pretty ridiculous to even think that. And maybe it's so many people have, you know, look, we've all kind of bought in on the Chargers a lot over the last 5, 6, 7 years, and everyone gets burned, right? And you're kind of sick of it. But, you know, and this isn't a situation where we're talking about a bottom feeder in the NFL. Now, they're in a tough division, obviously. Denver and Vegas, they're getting a lot better as well. And of course, the Chiefs. So it's going to be tough, I think, to, you know, really make a run for the playoffs. Maybe you're happy there's 7 openings this year, right? 3 wild cards. But yeah, this is nonsense to look at this football team and think that they have a high probability at the number one pick.
I'm glad that you said that. I knew we were running a little low on time, but that was definitely something I wanted to ask you, is just what can the Chargers expect in Tyrod Taylor? And hey, I mean, the Buffalo Bills might get their chance to go back up against Tyrod Taylor this season. So I think I'm hoping that's the case. That means the Chargers are actually staying patient with Justin Herbert. But hey, man, I'm really excited for that matchup when it comes. I mean, obviously, these two totally kind of different rosters right now. The Bills could potentially be vying for the number one seed in the AFC. I mean, for all we know right now. But I think one thing's for sure, these two teams, when they match up, having, you know, the Tyrod Taylor ties is definitely going to make it, you know, make for a better story for sure.
Absolutely. Good conversation, Daniel. Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, another special thank you to Joe Marino. You can find him and all of his great draft analysis on the rest of the NFL at The Joe Marino on Twitter. But that is going to wrap things up for today. Thank you guys for waiting a little longer for today's show. I definitely think it was worth the wait. I think that Joe Marino definitely brought it, and I had a bunch of Bills questions. But tomorrow we are back here doing a crossover with the Locked On Pats podcast, getting together with the Patriots to discuss the Patriots offseason, losing Tom Brady and all of those things. But until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On LAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. If you guys want to get your voices on the show, the number is 323-524-7924. Every Chargers voicemail gets played on the show. But we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Until then, take it easy and go Bolts.